jump shot. It goes. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King. Thursday edition of the show. As always, every Thursday on our show, as much as we can, David Cobb, beat writer for the Grizzlies from the Commercial Appeal. What's going on, man?
What's up, man? Just kind of enjoying this nice little reprieve between games here. There's been a couple of these like longer layoffs early on this season, so it's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's kind of weird when they had the long breaks. I don't really know what to do. So it's very strange. It's like usually just kind of going to the game, talk about the game, get it the next day, look at the next game, go, you know, so it's definitely weird, but I'll take it for sure. Let's jump right into it. I want to talk about the last two losses just to start off with you. The last two losses have been bad. They've been very bad losses. What do you make of those? And don't tell me they're a young team, but what do you make of those two losses just from a basketball standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors loss especially to me is a little bit tough to deal with, because I don't know if you saw, but they went and lost to the Mavericks by like 50 last night. And that's a team playing on a back-to-back, and they've only got like 9 players. So, I mean, I guess I kind of get it, but still, it goes to show just how bad that Warriors team is that the Grizzlies lost to the other night. I mean, that to me was just a lack of preparedness, maybe a little bit of a lack of inspiration. I don't necessarily buy what some people are saying. Oh, the team didn't have any heart. I mean, did you see him play on Friday against the Jazz? Did you see him play last week against the Hornets? Did you see him go on the road and win in San Antonio on Tony Parker night? The team has heart. It just didn't show up in that game the other night. And, it was, I think, probably got to be frustrating for anybody involved to live against the team. It was Golden State, okay? Like, the Memphis Hustle could have given that squad a run for its money. And the Grizzlies were just bad.
They were bad all around. There's not a whole lot of bright spots really when you look at it. Like you mentioned, they didn't show up. I mean, it was a game where you had an opportunity to really, which at the beginning of the year we all thought that was not going to be there. That opportunity against the Warriors was a scheduled loss at the beginning of the year, and you had an opportunity to come in and pick up a win where you may not, you know, had one. And I guess it's all an ebb and flow in the year, right? Like you got a win against maybe the Spurs or the Jazz where you didn't think you were going to get that. You drop one of the Warriors where maybe you thought you might get that one as well. So that's kind of how I think this season is going to work for you. Do you put it, I mean, what's your take on it's just they're young and it doesn't matter. Obviously the season in large as a whole really doesn't matter, but where do you land on the idea that they're just young and we shouldn't, I see a lot of this, we should just chill out and not talk about it. But like, that's our job. We have to talk about it every day. Where do you land on that? They're just young and we should just not worry about it.
I think you're allowed to be annoyed and a little miffed by the way they played against Golden State, but also in the context, understand that, you know, that game, really a lot of these games don't ultimately matter. I will take, if you're looking to draw conclusions about these Grizzlies, I'll take the other displays from last week, the wins, the clutch performances by John Morant. I'll put more stock in those than I do one really atrocious performance. I mean, and you could say that the Denver loss was pretty atrocious too, but I mean, to that one is a little bit more to be expected because of the caliber of the opponent and the fact that the Nuggets are a legitimate contender. So I'm not as maybe surprised by that one, but But yeah, I mean, the Warriors lost, the Denver lost, bad losses. But I mean, if I'm a Grizzlies fan, I'm not lamenting that. I'm looking up and I'm excited about the three wins that came before them, because those are true barometers of kind of indicators of what they can be. And you know, I'm not gonna just bail them out by saying, oh, they're a young team, because here's something that I think is kind of interesting. Once they show what they can do with those wins on the road and tight games, and show what they can do by beating a really quality Jazz team, I think you then have license to be more frustrated with the way they play against Golden State. And that's, I guess, perhaps what's gotten us to a point of feeling like some fans are pretty frustrated is, well, hold on now, look what you guys did, you know, all right. week, and then you go and you do this against the Warriors. Like, I get that a little bit, and I maybe sense a little bit of that within the team. I think Taylor Jenkins let him have it a little bit in that Denver game, because it didn't maybe always look like the effort was there. And this is a team that's shown that when they do play inspired and they do give effort, they can beat almost anybody if shots are falling. So that, to me, is an encouraging sign, and it almost kind of requires you to hold them to a higher standard now.
So we are allowed to be upset, is what you're telling me. It's okay.
Because I do think Taylor Jenkins was upset with the effort specifically against the Nuggets game. I didn't ascertain as much of what his reaction was in the Warriors game. But, you know, I forgot who I asked, but somebody in the locker room was like, so how's it? You know, just kind of try to get a feel for Jenkins, because, you know, Mark, like last year with JB Bickerstaff, you know, he would be into the post-game like media room like 5 minutes after the game ended, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Taylor, we had to like run down there to make sure we caught him on time.
Right. With Taylor, he's in there talking to him for a lot longer, it seems like. Either that or he's just like kicking up his feet, like looking at the box score. I mean, I guess I don't know specifically what he's doing in those 15-20 minutes between the end of the game and when he comes to talk to us. But about to guess, I'd say he's spending a lot of that time talking to players and talking to the team. Right. And so I'm trying to get a feel for what those interactions are like. And I think at least at some point over this little poor two-game stretch, he let him have it a little bit. And, you know, I guess, like I said, when you show what they've shown and what they're capable of, when they play with a steady level of effort, like, I guess he has the license to do that now, because of how good they can be and how good, you know, the potential is.
I think I'd probably, you know, tend to agree with you in the sense that, you know, you saw what this team is capable of doing. You saw what John Morant's capable of doing when they're playing at their very best. And obviously, there are going to be games where they don't play at their very best. But, you know, you've seen what this team is capable of doing, and you get excited. And it gets you excited to watch Ja play like that and Brandon play like that, and know that once everything's kind of clicking, that this could be a really fun and entertaining team. I just, you know, that I don't subscribe to the whole, like, I've got to chill out kind of or calm down kind of theory that I'm not allowed to ride the roller coaster of a season. That's what being a sports fan is all about. So if you're a Grizzlies fan, I would say, you know, be mad, be upset, be frustrated, be happy when they win. And all those type of things comes with being a fan as from a sports franchise. I don't take any stock to just don't have any emotion to your sports team. That's just not where I land on that for sure. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back talking with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal. Do you find yourself wanting a sports bet but have a lot of questions? Don't sweat it. MyBookie's patient customer service team can walk you through the process. And the best part is, if you join this Thanksgiving week, you'll still have one last shot to take advantage of their incredible sign-up offer. Just log on to MyBookie.com and make your first deposit with promo code LOCKEDONNBA. MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll, and that's on the top of a risk-free bet. Let me repeat this. It's a guaranteed deposit match and a risk-free bet for Thanksgiving only. So if you're a true football fan, don't let this opportunity pass you by. You simply cannot lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train and get in all the action with MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. Welcome back to the show again, talking with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal, like we do every single Thursday on this show. You can follow David on Twitter at David W. Cobb. Make sure you go follow him over there. Lots of breaking news sometimes from David when he's around the team, so you'll have a lot better insight than follow me, that's for sure. I want to talk to you a little bit about Jaren Jackson Jr. He was a highlight of my show on Wednesday, where I had probably 6 or 7 minutes on him about Jaren and what he's doing in the offense. just general, what do the Grizzlies need to do to get him involved? It almost feels like a vicious circle of he doesn't get the ball, he gets frustrated, he falls out of frustration, therefore he doesn't get the ball. Like, I don't know if that's the case.
And he gets more frustrated and he has right. to play the game, yeah.
Does that seem accurate? What do you see?
Yeah, I was talking about this with somebody the other night, and to me what it comes down to is, like, he is a good enough player, and the potential is so great, and we've seen such early flashes of it last season that, to me, the Grizzlies have to really begin to orchestrate their system around him specifically. At some point, maybe it's not tomorrow, but it's very soon. I think there's coming a point where this is going to become a lot of what Taylor Jenkins' first season as head coach is judged off of. Right. You know, I think the approach now is to, like, we're not really going to change up too much. Yeah, you guys need to be more intentional about looking for Jaren when he's got position, but we're not gonna throw everything out and, you know, just center this thing around Jaren. But at some point, if he continues to struggle, I think they do need to really sort of orient things around him and be just extremely intentional about, I don't know if it's getting him the ball in the high post, which is sort of an archaic concept now, or if it's feeding him on the block, one or the other. They need to get him the basketball close to the basket, because as great as it is that he's hoisting a nice number of three-pointers and connecting at a decent rate, his ball handling skills are not good enough yet for him to do anything else when he has the ball on the perimeter. I'm sorry, but when he gets the ball on the perimeter and doesn't shoot a three-pointer, he just looks sort of wayward if he tries to dribble and put it on the floor and play make. That's something that he's going to add to his game eventually, but it's not there yet. And so the other touches that he gets, they need to be with his back to the basket. And I think it's on Jenkins. I think it's on Jaren's teammates to look for him in those situations. Because this has got to be a year where you feel like he takes a step forward. And right now it's a season where you feel like he's taking a step back.
Well, where does Jonas Valanciunas fit into this, though? Because it seems like he's a guy that you kind of have to you have to get Jonas involved in the pick and roll, because if you don't, you push him out to the perimeter and he's really not, you know, you're not going to really defend Jonas Valanciunas out to the perimeter. So it kind of stacks the paint even more. Where does the pick and roll and Jonas and kind of Jaren all play together? Where does he fit?
Yeah, well, it's awkward when they're both on the court together, because then it does push Jaren pretty much exclusively out to the wing. I mean, I don't want to take minutes away from Jonas. If you look at net rating, he's among the best. He might be their best. Dylan's the best at the moment, I think, in net rating. But Jonas is number two, if I'm not mistaken. Just for the sake of rebounding, the sake of just sort of competency, you got to have Jonas play. But look, I mean, they made it work last year with Jaren and Mark, you know, and I know that that's not the style they want to play, but if in those minutes that Jaren and Jonas are on the court together, I mean, at some point, if you're the Grizzlies, do you not say, okay, our strength here is being bigger than these opposing teams, and using, you know, Jaren and Jonas together? Oh, I don't know. Like, they used to use Zebo and Mark. Look, I know I'm starting to talk like I'm nostalgic for grit and grind or something, but I mean, this is not about abandoning pace and space. It's not about reverting to an old style of play. It's not about, you know, scoring less than 100 points a game or shooting fewer than 23 pointers a game. This is about getting your best player and your franchise cornerstone, getting his confidence back and getting him moving in the right direction steadily. I mean, there's been a few games where you think, oh, he's back, he looks fine. But I still don't think that Jaren found true comfort at any point this season. And maybe you have to revert back to what he's most comfortable in to sort of just reprogram him, get him going, and get him feeling confident again at some point. Because like I said, this season is as much about developing him, and a lot of that falls on Taylor Jenkins, and there may be some things stylistically that he's got to tweak and go outside of his comfort zone so he can get Jaren back in his comfort zone.
Yeah, I think that the difference that you know, Mark and Zebo, or even Mark and Jaren last year, Mark operated out of the high post, operated out kind of the elbow area. And it's not something that they seem to really do with Jonas to be able to put Jaren back down low and have Jonas operate, because Marcus just he's a much better passer. He's a much smarter player. Way higher IQ player than Jonas. Not that Jonas is not a smart player, but Mark is one of the most cerebral players out there. And so I think that part of it, I think, is what falls short. There is, you have Jonas, you know, maybe at the high post, and I don't even know how that works, but you're right. Like, it's at a certain point, like you just got to get Jaren the ball. And I don't know. And then again, it's not my job or it's not your job to tell him how to do that. We're not the coaches. But at some point, you got to figure it out, because you can't let Jaren be. I added up the shots Wednesday for this. He was a sixth best option in terms of shots on Wednesday night. Like, there's no reason your team should ever, Jaren Jackson Jr. should ever be sixth on shots in the team. Like, that's not going to work. It's not going to win you games long term. Is it as simple as just getting him, maybe getting the ball earlier in the shot clock to get him more involved?
Yeah,
because
they just need to be programmed to do that. I mean, right. There's been glimpses and stretches, and I think they've gotten a little bit better at it. I don't have numbers to prove it, but I mean, compared to where they were at the beginning of the season, I do think that they've started to look for him on those early seals a little bit more, which are where a lot of his buckets came from last year. They just need to be programmed to do that, I think, to a certain extent. But at the same time, they're also trying to learn this new system where it's all about sort of swinging the ball, and looking for open three-pointers, and that's. So they're sort of balancing conflicting interests to a certain extent with trying to get Jaren going and also trying to program themselves to play this new style. And that's a fine line to walk. And so it's what's most important, at some point, because obviously the two are somewhat in conflict. And, you know, I think until Jaren is just really well established as a perimeter playmaker, I think he's still 4 or 5 years away from really having the handles to be a serious threat to put the ball on the deck a la Giannis and really freak a defense out. I mean, I know he says he worked on his ball handling a lot this offseason, but it's just not effective, really. And so I think for the time being, as he develops, and as the Grizzlies develop this new style, they're in conflict to a certain extent, because I don't think that the style, as it's being played now, best maximizes what Jaren's strengths are right now. And I think over time, those two things will sort of coalesce, but that's perhaps wishful thinking based off what we've seen so far.
Yeah, it seems like they try to do that earlier in the game, and then it doesn't work.
They forget about it, yeah.
And they just forget about it, and it never goes back to it. And it just it's a strange proposition for real. Let's take one more quick break. We'll be back and finish up with David Cobb. Welcome back to the show. Talking with David Cobb from the Commercial Appeal Grizzlies beat right over there. Let's shift to Ja Morant a little bit. Obviously spent a whole segment on Jaren Jackson Jr., which I think was worth it. But Ja Morant, 35 minutes on Tuesday night. And after all this, we talked about it we had you on a few weeks ago about Ja Morant and his minutes. After all that, this is the game they roll him out, play him 35 minutes, like when it was over for most.
I part of the fourth that quarter? As like a sign of frustration on behalf of the Grizzlies. I think that Taylor Jenkins was so frustrated that the Grizzlies were getting just torched by a terrible Golden State team that he sort of in his mind slipped, and I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say slipped as if it was an accident or something, but.
Right.
I mean, maybe it wasn't the best decision, but he went with it because he was – I mean, how could you not believe that this team wasn't going to get back in that game? I mean, look at who they were playing. Like, yeah. And I think if you look at it, I mean, they know the numbers. They know that the Grizzlies have been way better with Ja Morant on the floor than they have been with Tyus Jones on the floor. And I think that he probably thought that they were going to get back in that game. And I think that's probably what that stemmed from. I don't think it was – I'd be surprised if they could legitimately look at, you know, come up with some sort of medical or scientific or whatever sort of reason for it. I think that the reason was we're losing to the Golden State Warriors and Ja Morant's our best player probably. So let's put him out there. I think that's what that was. I think they wanted to win that game and they were frustrated that they weren't, and Ja's minutes climbed as a result.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Tyus Jones only had 13 minutes in that game, but for the small time that he was in, I thought he was I thought he was good.
Jaws plus minus, if I'm not mistaken, was worst on the team in the Warriors game.
Yeah,
so
it was bad.
I mean, yeah, like net rating for the season, Jaws way better than Tyus in that regard. But in that game specifically, you could argue that Tyus was more effective. It just felt like things that might be the most frustrated I've seen Jaws. He ended up with 20 points in the team high because he scored 9 points in like the last 7 minutes or something.
Right.
But until that point, he was as bad as I've seen him this year. Because not because he hasn't had some games where he wasn't super productive, but it just seemed like he was boxed up a little bit more in that game than he has been so far this season. You know, and I guess ultimately you come away encouraged because he still led your team in points. But that to me was not one of his finer efforts. And I'm not panicking. It's fine. You know, he's shown so much, but there's not, like, it's just part of it. Like, you know, but yeah, it was not his best game, no doubt.
No, everybody has bad games. Even 7-year veterans. I mean, it's not like that's not uncommon. So I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, I have bad stories sometimes. Like, actually, you know, wrote a story about Morant after that game. I was like, this is lame, but you know,
yeah.
Whatever.
I got bad podcasts all the time, so it's fine.
Yeah.
John Morant, you mentioned that he, you know, I thought as well, this is probably his worst game, but also note, I mean, it's noted. They had Alec Burks guarding him, I think, for most of the part, and he's a much bigger player. That's something to note that he really struggled with that length and kind of size of a different defender to me than he otherwise has throughout the year. Did you see that, or is that just something? Am I seeing?
No, I think
he's just bad
probably
in general.
Right there. Like watching those Warriors.
It's probably a little bit of both, honestly. But
well, yeah, like watching the Warriors warm up, I was like, all right, like Ja's gonna have a field day. Like, who are they gonna put on? And like
right,
Kai Bowman or whatever. Like, I mean, I can hardly remember the Warriors' names now. But like Jakob Poole or Jordan Poole, excuse me, Jordan Poole. Like, who are they gonna put on this guy? Like, seriously. But, yeah, Burks did a really nice job on him. I don't know. I don't know if it was the length. I'm trying to think back to the other players throughout this early season who have guarded Morant. But I do think maybe there is a theme with Denver, with Orlando, then with Golden State. Not that I would say Golden State is really a big physical team, but Golden State looked good on defense in that one particular game. And so maybe the theme or the trend, if you want to find one, is the physical, slower-paced teams being more effective at containing Morant, which makes sense because of the pace at which he plays and how the Grizzlies, you know, want to play. It would make sense that the Grizzlies and Morant would be better against teams that were less physical and playing at a faster pace. So maybe there's some correlation there. Maybe it's the slower-paced teams, the more physical teams. Are the teams that he struggles to be more productive against?
Maybe it's something to just kind of file away. That's kind of what I took from it. It's just something to think about. Like, just it's if it happens again, maybe like we can go back and go, okay, it is starting to be a pattern. But it is such a short season. It's hard to find any type of correlation with defense and Ja right now. It's just because he's been so good. I mean, he hasn't really had a lot of bad games. It's just been really, really good throughout the season.
You know, one thing he added to his arsenal that I'm sticking out of and sort of replay that game in my mind that I thought was actually a positive takeaway from the Golden State game for Ja was there were a couple of instances where he got to the paint and he sort of got stonewalled as he got to the paint. But instead of trying to do, you know, what he sometimes does and bring the house down or just get extremely tricky, he sort of has this nice turnaround fadeaway jumper from like 12 feet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do remember that.
Which I don't necessarily think that if it's happened, I hadn't noticed it. And so that was a little trick that he threw in there that I thought was a positive takeaway for him.
Yeah, I did. I noticed that as well. And now that you point that out, I don't think I've seen that a lot from him either. He usually gets there and passes or shoots. So, it's never been it's a floater, not necessarily a fadeaway. So that is interesting is that you mentioned that. Last question, I'll get you out of here. I get this question, I'm sure you do all the time. So when I'm asking anyway, how many more of these losses is it going to take for Josh Jackson to get on the court?
My stance on this is if you were going to call him up in November, why wasn't he with the team all along? I mean, he missed out on weeks of training camp. because they were going to assign him to the Hustle. He hasn't, I don't even think, participated in a practice with the Grizzlies. And then after six games, you're just going to, with the Hustle, you're just going to, all right, well, come on, Josh. Like, I think that they have to keep him with the Hustle to justify their decision to put him with the Hustle in the first place. Because if you're going to call, you can't be surprised that Josh Jackson is playing well in the G League. Yes, it's encouraging. Yes, it's fun. But, like, I mean, shame on the Grizzlies if they are surprised that a former number four overall pick with his physical tools is playing really well against the G League competition.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Like, that's where I come down on it. So, like, I mean, it would be more shocking if he was playing poorly. I mean, like I said, everything's encouraging. Like, it's not certainly not a bad thing that he's playing well. It's encouraging, but I just don't think that it should be surprising that he is. And I mean, I'm not saying that without knowing the inner workings of their plan, as they've played it pretty close to the best, I'm not advocating for it. I'm not saying that they've done the right thing. I'm not saying that. I really don't think that making Josh Jackson spend time in the G League is going to endear yourself to him if you want to sign him in unrestricted free agency. So I don't know exactly what the plan is. I don't know. I'm not saying it was a great idea. All I'm saying is that it looks like an even dumber idea if you call him up in November.
Yeah, I said that after the first game that he was down at the Hustle. Like, if he's not dominating the Hustle, that's when you should be concerned, right? Not now. Sort of treated like the summer league. Like, if your best player is not out there dominating against a bunch of guys who are not at the NBA or not going to be in the NBA, then that is when you should be concerned, not when he's doing it. You shouldn't be surprised that he's out there blowing it up. You should be surprised when he doesn't. So that's an interesting point, though, that it, you know, him not being with the team all year, that he's suddenly going to just be okay. And I don't know. It's a very curious case, and I'm always curious to kind of see what he thinks, you know, to know what Josh thinks about it.
One more thing on that, too, is that with Grayson Allen about ready to return, I mean, they've picked up his third-year option. Marco Guterich is on a two-year guaranteed deal. These are guys that they've invested in that are under contract for longer than Josh Jackson is. So it's tantalizing, it is interesting, and as much potential as there is there with Josh Jackson, I mean, there's a better chance if you just look at it from a mathematics standpoint. I think a higher probability that Marco Guterich or Grayson Allen is on your team next season, which I know fans are probably jumping out of their seats with joy for. But I think you owe it to yourself as an organization to make sure you do get the extended run they need to develop, because they're the players who are under contract for you next season. And if you call Josh Jackson up, unless you're pretty determined to trade him and get his trade value up, I don't really know how it benefits you in a season where wins and losses aren't the ultimate goal.
That's very true. I just think, you know, you've got to see him on the court against an NBA team to make those decisions. Like,
right.
You just got to see what he can do against competent NBA players over a given span of time to be able to make those type of decisions confidently.
I think you need to be, potentially, you need to ease him in as well.
Yeah.
I don't think they can just call him up and throw him out there for 19 minutes night one. I think, you know, they've got to get him practicing with the Grizzlies. Like, because that's the beauty of this situation with the Hustle being right here, is you don't have to fly him commercial 5 hours from Sioux Falls to get any use out of him on the NBA level. I mean, they can go ahead and start having him practice with the Grizzlies now. I don't see what drawback there would be to that. So maybe that's, I think, the first step. And maybe we start seeing those steps over the next week or two. But I've kind of – my marker in the sand, so to speak, has been mid-December. Like, I've said that I would be surprised if he gets called up before mid-December. And so that's kind of where I'm at on that right now.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting conversation for sure. When he does eventually get here, and I don't think he goes and doesn't play for the Grizzlies. And like you mentioned, maybe that first step is just practicing. Is it Solomon Hill's minutes that are gone, getting kind of taken away, or it's not Kyle Anderson? It's not going to be Tyus Jones. It's not going to be Brandon Clark.
Love Solomon Hill. Love Solomon Hill. At some point, though, what value is there in playing him? Because. Right. I mean, are they trying to get his trade value up? Does he have trade value at all? I mean, I don't know.
No, he does not. The answer is no.
Okay. So what's the, you know, like, look, I get it. Like, this is, like, if you're the coach of the Grizzlies, Yeah, heck yeah. We want Solomon Hill out there. This is a veteran guy. He makes the right play most of the time. He's a leader in the locker room. Yes, he earns those minutes in practice, absolutely. If you're the front office of the Grizzlies, it's like, okay, well, Solomon Hill is not a part of our future. These three players are, and, you know, they are getting fewer minutes because Solomon Hill is playing. So that's sort of a classic struggle, front office coach struggle right there. Not saying that those are the dynamics at play. I'm not saying that Taylor Jenkins is defying the front office or anything like that, but I think that's sort of – those two viewpoints are competing in the situation with that Solomon Hill is currently in, I think. That's how I see it.
For sure, man. I appreciate you coming on, David. Again, if you're not already following David Cobb, go follow him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. What's coming up? What's up right now that people can read?
Yeah, I did like a 1,300 word like grading piece, which I've done like kind of like every 2 weeks. So I've got a couple of guys with C's and a couple of guys with A pluses. That's cumulative like for the whole season so far. So I did every player, even all the way down to Melton and Tomoklo. I gave them each a grade as well. So that will take you a little bit of time to get through, but if you want to check it out, it's a subscribers only piece that's up now, and of course there'll be some additional stuff over the next few days.
Make sure you go and read that again over at thecommercialappeal.com. Make sure you go subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode. Every single day, make sense these episodes. Every Thursday with David, Tuesdays with Amari. Go subscribe to whatever podcast platform you have, Spotify, Stitcher. If you're on Apple iTunes, make sure you go rate and review the show. David, I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again.
See you soon, bro.
See you.